Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Sing us a song, you're the piano man.
How do we do that? Dee, 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 dee.
Then you got us feeling all right. La di da di di da. We di di da di da di di da. We di di da.
Okay.
What?
Hey everybody, how's it going? You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Anton.
Don't ask what that song had to do with this episode.
Nothing.
Because the answer is nothing.
You know, we used to guess what the songs were, and now we've just
We should go back to Name That Tune.
Name That Tune, yeah. Instead of just like find a tune that lines up with the episode.
At least that was making a game out of it.
Yeah, it's true. I do like games. And speaking of games, today we were talking about one game in particular. It's Magic the Gathering, because a new set is on the way. It's Rivals of Ixalan. It was just spoiled last week, the entire set. Very exciting. This is the continuation of Ixalan. This is the second part in the block. And there's a lot of really interesting cards in here, including some incredible legendary creatures. But before we get into it, let's talk about our sponsors for the show. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. They have been a sponsor for quite a while now, and they are the best. If you guys want to get Magic sealed product, like all of these awesome cards, build a new commander deck. There are some Elder Dinosaurs in this set. There are some really, really interesting.
Zakama.
Zakama.
You want Zakama.
Everyone wants Zakama.
Yeah. I mean, we only got one copy, so we're going to have to fight over it.
Yeah,
we probably have to give it to Craig.
Yeah.
Honestly.
No, I think Craig does deserve it.
Yeah.
Zakama is
But
ridiculous.
If you want Zakama, then you pre-order it using the affiliate link, cardkingdom.com/CommandZone.
Yeah. Our other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro, and that's something else you can order when you're over at Card Kingdom. You can also get some of these new awesome playmats.
Speaking of Zakama,
hey,
you can see the Zakama playmat that I've got in front of me right here.
Yeah, I've got I think this is a New Horizons or some kind of, but there's dinosaurs on this one. Either way, great art, as always, from Ultra Pro to put on these playmats. High quality stuff. If you buy any Ultra Pro product, you are also supporting the show, so please go ahead and do that. And the final way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/CommandZone. We do something special. We announce, shout out, give a big high five to one lucky patron every single week, and that person this week is
Ernest DeLeon. Ernest,
man.
You rock.
You rock.
All right, let's jump right into the set review for Rivals of Ixalan. As always, we're going to go through the new mechanics in the set first, or the returning mechanics also.
New
just the
mechanic.
Yeah, there's one new mechanic, and then there's a bunch of returning mechanics. So the new mechanic is called Ascend.
Oh.
And Ascend will be on cards, some permanent, some instants or sorceries. And what it says is if you control 10 or more permanents and you have to have played a card or a card in play that has Ascend, then you get what's called City's Blessing. And City's Blessing is like a token emblem. It's more like an emblem.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have City's Blessing, that sort of turns on additional abilities on a bunch of cards. And the thing to note about Ascend and City's Blessing is once you get it, you've got it. That's it. There's currently no way to remove City's Blessing. So if you have, let's say, 10 lands in play, you play a card with Ascend, you get City's Blessing, and then somebody destroys one of your lands, and now you're back down to 9 permanents in play, you don't lose City's Blessing. You just keep it for the rest of the game.
City has blessed you. It's a token that you can get with Rivals of Ixalan, and it's kind of like the Monarch token, except this case it just stays with you. It's like an emblem for the rest of the game.
Yep.
Usually enhances the card if you have Ascend as well. We have a couple examples of it. It's, in general, not... they didn't have any like standout ones for EDH. A lot of them are more in like limited and standard
There's
play.
A few, but it is good in our format because games just go longer in EDH, so you can basically guarantee that at some point in the game you're going to have 10 permanents in play, unless you're playing like a Storm deck or a instant and sorcery-based deck, then maybe not, but most...
Even then, you'll have Signets and lands out.
Yeah, and a lot of times you're just going to get to 10 lands at some point, so I think Ascend is... It's kind of a gimme as far as that. At some point, you'll get it. So
it's dece.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the returning mechanics. Now, these were originally introduced in Ixalan or before. The first is Explore, which is a new enters the battlefield effect. So what happens is if a creature has Explore, when it enters the battlefield, you reveal the top card of your library. And you can put that card into your hand if it's a land. Otherwise, you get to play a +1/+1 counter on a target creature. Usually on the creature with Explore, and then you can either put that card that you revealed back on top of your library or into your graveyard. So it kind of functions as a scry in a little bit. Sometimes it draws you a card.
It puts cards in your graveyard, which can be good for certain decks.
Yeah,
it's a value mechanic.
Yeah, and it has a lot of different parts to it, and I like it a lot. The next recurring mechanic is Raid. This was introduced in Khans of Tarkir. Rest in peace, Khans. I wish we could draft you every day. It triggers if you've attacked with a creature with this turn, and it somewhat works a little differently in the set. So more cards that trigger raid each turn. Sometimes it says, if you attack with a creature this turn, then something happens, as opposed to, like, I forget, there's like a difference. There's a slight difference in how
in Khans, usually you'd play a card and just at that one moment it would say, oh, did you attack with a creature this turn? In Ixalan and Rivals, it tends to have more cards that just sort of sit on the battlefield and do something every turn if you attacked with a creature that turn. I hope that made sense. The next returning mechanic is Enrage. Friend of the show, John Stone, also my high school classmate who works at Wizards now, came up with this mechanic. It's an effect that triggers whenever the creature within rage is dealt damage. So you might gain life, you might, you know, ping your opponent, you might make a token, blah, 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 every time that creature takes damage. And the last mechanic, I guess there's two more, but neither of them is actually a mechanic. Tribal is we put down. So it's a very tribal-focused set. If you don't know what tribal is, that just has to do with the creature types, usually. So vampire, dinosaur, merfolk, pirate, those are the four tribes in Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, and there'll be a bunch of cards that sort of have to do with the number of vampires you control, or do something based on, you know, the number of vampires or the number of pirates, or say all of your pirates get X, or do this for all the dinosaurs you got, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
All your dinosaurs get plus one, that kind of thing. I will note that we're not going to talk a ton about the cards that, like, only care about tribes. Like, you don't need us to say, hey, there's a 2/2 merfolk that gives all your merfolk plus one.
Play it in your merfolk deck.
Play it in your merfolk deck. If you're building a vampire, dinosaur, pirate, or merfolk deck, look through Rivals of Ixalan. There's probably going to be some cards for you there.
For sure. And the last sort of mechanic is treasure. Treasure is a new artifact that can be generated by certain cards. Wait, speaking of which, have you seen that new video for Finesse with Cardi B and Bruno Mars?
Is it sweet?
They took Finesse and remixed it and made it the most 80s video and song ever, and
I feel
amazing.
Like Bruno just sort of wants to do that all the time anyway.
He does, and then he went full, like usually it's like a throwback, but this time he went 100% into it.
That's awesome.
Anyway, treasure! It's an artifact that you can tap to sacrifice to add one mana of any color to your mana pool, and it's thematic with Ixalan as you are looking for treasure, and that treasure provides you with more mana. There's one card in this set that makes me very happy. It's a red one that has treasure
in it. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Notably, the difference between treasure and gold, and we kind of didn't highlight this in the Ixalan set review, is that treasure you have to tap and sacrifice because of the improvised mechanic, I guess, is why they did that.
Yeah, otherwise you could break it a little bit.
Yeah, okay. So,
talk about some cards.
Let's talk about the cards. So, spoiler alert, we've sort of teased this on Twitter. We talked about it a little last episode. The very next Game Nights, which is coming out, depending on when you're listening to this, in about a week and a half, will feature us playing the four new multicolored legendary creatures from this set. So we're going to talk about them right now. The first one is Azor, the Lawbringer. This is the Azorius Guildmaster, right?
I guess so.
I don't know why he's on Ixalan, but I believe that's true. He costs two,
I should know this.
Two white, his white, blue, blue. So six mana total. That is a hefty mana cost. Two white, white, blue, blue. All right, for a legendary creature... I
mean, don't speak too soon, by the
Sphinx,
way.
Sphinx, it makes sense, but you'll see. Legendary creature Sphinx. It's a 6/6, has flying, as all Sphinxes do. When Azor the Lawbringer enters the battlefield, each opponent can't cast instant or sorcery spells during that player's next turn. So it kind of... It's silence, they don't cast any spells. But anyway, it basically, no instant or sorceries until their next turn.
During that player. So let's say you cast Azor and you pass to me. I can't cast instants or sorceries during my turn.
Oh, but then it goes to the next player's turn, you could.
I could.
If you had
Bedalkan. I mean, mostly, if depending on your mana, it's going to stop you from casting sorceries, because it's like you pass the turn, I'll be like, all right, on your end step, I'll do some instant stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But it does lock down. There's another card in the set that does this as well. But
it does a weird lock, and it sort of locks sorceries down, depending on what
you've got. Which can be really big, I mean, depending on when you play it. So, especially like a board wipe.
True. Oh, yeah, true. Most board wipes are sorceries, although this deck's probably not. This deck's playing the board wipes. It's not worried about board wipes as much. Okay, and then Azor has another ability. It's whenever Azor attacks, you may pay white, blue, blue, and X. And if you do, you gain X life and draw X cards. So
that's
a card called Sphinx's Revelation.
Yeah, very good card.
Yeah, which is a very good card. So Azor, you can Sphinx's Revelation whenever you attack.
Yeah, if you're casting this for six mana, that means you can do it for three immediately.
I mean, the next time you attack, yeah.
Guaranteed, yeah. But it's on attack. It's not combat damage. I think Azor is an amazing Azorius commander to build around. I would 100% build a deck around this card.
This feels like the type of deck that you put a lot of board wipes in and you just card advantage out your opponents.
Yeah.
I mean, you could also do Sphinx Tribal.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, you could. I'm just
about saying. Time. Put Dunesh in there.
There's nothing in there that says Sphinxes, but you just could is what I'm saying. I'm not saying you should. I should read the next one, I suppose. I guess we can spoil who we're playing. Everybody knows Craig's playing Zakama because of last episode.
Yep.
I'm referring to the next game nights. Mel Lee is playing Azor.
The Longrunner.
And I am playing Alenda, the Dusk Rose. So Alenda is 2WB for a 1/1 legendary creature, Vampire Knight. 4 mana, 1/1, huh? Has lifelink. It says, whenever another creature dies, put a 1/1 counter on Alenda. That's any creature, can even be a token, and it's by any player. When Alenda dies, create X 1/1 white vampire creature tokens with lifelink, where X is Alenda's power.
Hey.
Couple of things to note about that second ability. I mean, obviously, it's sort of obvious how it works, because you put Alenda out, as creatures die, Alenda continues to grow. Eventually, Alenda dies, and you get a ton of vampires. Here's the thing. Alenda has to go to the graveyard for you to get the vampires. Right. If you go to the command zone, Alenda's not technically dying. It's kind of like Pawn of Ulamog. There's
a
few cards.
Replacement effect.
Yeah. So you won't get vampires unless you choose to put Alenda into the graveyard, which is problematic because, you know, you have to then build your deck to be able to get Alenda back into play.
If you're building purely around Alenda. Otherwise,
she's
sort of
like a
one-shot.
I mean, why are you playing her? Yeah, exactly.
You could do a vampire tribal deck.
I think maybe next episode or we'll go over the deck that I built for it after people have had a chance to watch game nights. It's an interesting card to build around because of that problem. And token decks aren't usually the type of decks that want to have graveyard recursion.
Yeah, because where are you recurring?
Because you're making tokens. You don't want to recur. You can't recur tokens. So it's an interesting conundrum. The other thing I wanted to mention is that Alenda creates the number of vampires equal to her power, not the number of counters on her. So
right.
If you put like a sort of feast and famine on her, now she's a 3/3. If she were to die in that instance, you would get 3 vampires, even though she has 0 counters on her. So,
which is actually kind of interesting. I think you could definitely put things in the deck to make sure that she's never completely, you know, out
yeah.
the gate.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting deck. I think the deck can be powerful, but there's a limit because of that, the intricacies of how the command zone and going to the graveyard works and everything. And you know what? I'm a little bit mad they did that.
Yeah.
Like, it's a legendary creature. It's a 4-mana 1/1. What format's it for? It ain't for standard. No one's playing a 4-mana 1/1 in standard, right? So it ain't for modern. It ain't for legacy. So it must be for commander. If it's for commander, why'd you put a mechanic on it that is basically doesn't work with the format that well?
Yeah, it kind of messes a little bit with that. It's interesting because we've seen this happen with a couple of other, I think, cards in the past. And maybe it's just text that doesn't exist in the database, that if it would be sent to the command zone,
if it would leave the battlefield.
Yeah, well, in that case, you're just flickering it over and over again then.
So, but I mean, you're
in the battlefield's different. I think you
you're
have
in white black, is you're not in blue, so you true. Don't have a lot of ways. Not that there's zero, but
I think you would want, oh, white has a lot of ghostly flicker-esque effects.
I think everyone's fine with like,
I think you need an extra line of text that says if Alenda would die or be sent to the command zone.
Sure, but I don't think they can put the words command zone into a standard set, right? It would have to be a commander product. Anyway, I'm just slightly miffed about that. That's the way it goes. Okay, let's talk about the
third legendary creature.
This is your deck.
This is the deck that I built. The first time I played, I think, a full blue-green deck on game nights. It's Kumena, Tyrant of Araska. It's 1GB for a 2/4 legendary creature, Merfolk Shaman. And he has 3 lines of text. The first is, tap another untapped Merfolk you control. Kumena, Tyrant of Araska, can't be blocked this turn. The second line is, tap 3 untapped Merfolk you control, draw a card. And the third line is, tap 5 untapped Merfolk you control, and put a +1/+1 counter on each Merfolk you control. So, interesting things. The first line, you cannot tap, obviously, Kumena to trigger this on himself to make him not be blocked. It has to be another Merfolk. But the other two abilities, to tap Merfolk to draw a card or put counters on, you can tap Kumena for. So, really, Kumena's out. You only need to play 2 more Merfolk to start tapping them and drawing cards.
That's really what you want to do. Come on, let's be honest. You want to draw cards.
You don't really want at least I found that it was almost impossible to get to the final tap five on tap Merfolk to put counters on a bunch of things, just because by the time you cast four other creatures, you don't want to be, you know, there's a lot of other
if
things.
If you have five Merfolk in play, you're winning. You don't want to be tapping them all. You want to be attacking, right?
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Doing the other things that the Merfolk do.
You want to be doing, you want to be attacking. Sure, you can end step tap them or whatever. But the thing is, a lot of Merfolk have tons of other abilities on them. These aren't just like 1/1 tokens that can't do anything else. So, Commander, though, I think is a very powerful commander just because of the draw a card ability. And obviously, you know, if you want to do some kind of unblockable shenanigans with him, then sure, go for that too.
Then sure, do it.
Yeah, why not?
It's in blue-green, so it's, you know, it's going to be good no matter what.
Yeah.
It's cool to have a couple of Merfolk choices, and I like this one better because it's low mana cost.
Yeah.
So I think this is...
Yeah, three mana is great.
Yeah, so I think this is one of the better Merfolk choices. It gives you access to green and has relevant abilities. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like that card a lot.
I like it too.
The next one is we're going to go into the Elder Dinosaurs, which are all legendary, but Zakama is the first one. We did an entire episode about Zakama, so I don't want to go over it a lot. I'll read the card, though, in case you missed that episode. It's 6 red, green, white, 9 mana total for a 9/9 legendary creature. Elder Dinosaur has Vigilance, Reach, and Trample. Says when Zakama enters the battlefield, if you cast it, remember, if you cast it, untap all lands you control. Then there's 3 activated abilities. Pay 2 in a red. Zakama deals 3 damage to target creature. Pay 2 in a green. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. Pay 2 in a white. You gain 3 life. Those don't require you to tap Zakama or anything. So if you have, you know, 6 mana, you can deal 6 damage to something or destroy 2 artifacts or gain 6 life. This card is incredible. I think it's definitely the best preview card we've ever had.
Yeah, it's potentially one of the best Naya commanders out there as well.
I think it is the best Naya commander. Okay, I'm just going to say that without actually having researched it.
The only other two is Mayael, the Anima.
And Marith.
And Marith, yeah. Marith might, is pretty Marith's good just bonkers. Because it's a 3-mana commander. In terms of commanders that cost more than 6 mana.
Okay, there you go. Naya commanders that cost more than 6 mana and begin with the letter Z and R are dinosaurs. Zakama's the best
there
one.
There you go. Boom, got there.
There's 2 little interactions I wanted to note for Zakama that we didn't mention on the last episode. Just didn't think of them.
Mm-hmm.
One, a lot of people said Mycosynth Lattice to turn everything into artifacts.
Oh,
in which case Zakama can just start
blowing everything up.
Yeah, anything that you want.
And you have the mana to cast that kind of card too.
Yeah, and the other one is Temur Sabertooth, which right. is an unsummon effect on a stick that allows you to just, once you're at like
12
mana,
yeah.
you can go infinite with Sabertooth and Zakama. So those are 2 cards that we failed to mention that people pointed out to us, and I think... those are must includes in that deck.
Yeah.
They're very good.
All right, so we all know that Elder Dragon Highlander is the original name of the format EDH. However, did you know that it also can stand for Elder Dinosaur Highlander? Because this set has provided us with the second appearance of Elder Legendary Creatures. Now, back during Dragons of Tarkir, we had some Elder Dragons, and the original ones were like Nicol Bolas and all of the OG ones.
Vicus Asmodi, Chromium, Arcade Sabbath, and oh, crap. Oh, man, I can't remember the 5th one.
We'll never know.
There's no way to find out.
If you know, yell at the podcast right now. So in this set...
I'm so disappointed in myself.
I'm not. I only know Vivictus, and the rest of them I was just like, sure, Arcane something? Okay, cool.
You know Chromium.
I do know Chromium, that's true. It would have taken me a second to come up with Chromium, though.
Okay, you keep talking, I gotta look it up.
All right, so Elder Dinosaurs are the new Elder creature, and there are 5 of them in this set. They are all, well, including Zakama, there's 6, but there are 5 of them. They're all monocolored, and they're all very interesting and very different. So let's kick things off with the white dinosaur. It is Zatalpa Primal Dawn. Zatalpa, not to be confused with Zakama, very similar, I know. This is a 8 mana card, 6 white, white. Oh, what is it?
It's Palladium Ores.
Palladium Ores.
Dang it. Dang it. And that's the, no, that's not the Naya one. That's the, what is, yeah, that's the Naya one.
Considering we just talked about the Naya card in Zakama.
It is
Josh.
Not the best Naya commander. I mean, Palladia isn't. Okay,
Palladia
anyway,
isn't.
Sorry,
okay.
So go back to Zatalpa.
All right, so Zatalpa, it's an 8 mana card, 6 white, white for a 4/8 legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur. Are you ready? Flying, double strike, vigilance, trample, indestructible.
Word soup. Keyword soup.
Word soup. We talked about how good this is with something like Audric. This card is interesting. It's 8 mana, and I don't think it's that good.
Oh, no. Especially as your commander, it's horrible because you're in white. So your ways to ramp are not that great.
I don't think any of these as commanders are even that great, honestly, for the monocolors. I think there's always going to be a better option. I think these are cards you put into decks in the same way that you might put like a Praetor.
Yeah. Thing is, yeah, And that's exactly what I was going to say. Zatalpa, 8 mana. You know what else you can cast for 8 mana? Vorinclex.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you need to be doing with 8 mana. It ain't, you know, making a 4-8 flying, double strike, vigilance, trample, indestructible, and then hoping to untap with it. And then what? Hit somebody for 8? Okay. Let's go on to the next one, which is, oh man, I lost
Nezahal.
Nezahal. The Primal Tide, I believe this was Wedge in the Mana Source's preview card. It's 5 blue-blue for a 7/7 Elder Dinosaur Legendary Creature. Of course, Nezahal can't be countered. You have no maximum hand size.
Okay.
Whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, draw a card.
Okay.
This is all good. Discard 3 cards, exile Nezahal, return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So you can always protect it from a board wipe or spot removal.
What was the card that was in Standard that was very similar to this? There's a couple of versions.
Yeah, they usually make like a control card that's sort of like a finisher.
Yeah,
this is that type of card. I know the one you're talking about, but I forget what it was called.
I love this whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, draw a card, though. You it's will be drawing sweet. A lot. Yeah, now for 7 mana, it's still pretty expensive, but...
at least it can't be countered. That's kind of good. At least you're not going to just immediately... It's hard to get totally blown out. Like, because even if they Swords to Plowshares it, yeah, you're down 6 mana, but you draw a card, so you're up a card. And again, you could always protect it by discarding 3 cards. It's okay. I mean, there's no way it's ever going to be Teferi or Baral or Talrand or one of these mono blue things, you know.
As Commander, I think I need to view all of these cards in the 99 to make them sort of
even
like...
Even then. Because it doesn't also go in Gishoth or Zakama.
True.
So what's the... I don't know. I don't know what deck this is going in.
It's going to go in a mono blue stompy. I don't know.
Does that even exist?
Or even just like mono blue creature stompy? I don't know. Either way, they're fun, but they may not be great. All right, next up we have Tetsamok, Primal Death. And we're going down to mana cost. This is 4 black-black for a 6/6 legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur, with Death Touch.
You know we have the real card, right?
You can pay a black to reveal Tetsamok Primal Death from your hand and put a prey counter on target creature. So you can read it too.
Prey, P-R-E-Y.
Prey, yeah.
Not this one.
This. Activate this ability only during your turn. When Tetsamok enters the battlefield, destroy each creature your opponents control with a prey counter on it. Now this card I think is great.
This is probably the most, well, the red one's pretty good too. It's really good because it works well with itself. It costs 6 mana, but leading up to it coming out, you just start...
Revealing it from your hands.
Yeah, you're marking others for death. Oh, yeah, it has to be from your hand. So if it's not in your hand,
It can't be your commander. Don't make this your commander.
Oh, if it's in the command zone, you can't even activate that ability.
But here's the thing. If you're playing black or
black
or mono, well, I mean, who knows? I like it better this way, honestly. If it was a commander card, that would be, I think, a little too powerful.
I guess this is maybe fringe playable in real formats. I doubt it is. Don't yell at me, but I'm just saying.
Right.
It's not like Alenda where a 4-mana 1/1 is never getting played.
Yeah,
but
well,
this...
the cool thing about this is that, you know, if you have like mana doublers in black, you can just mark every creature, and then when it comes out, it's a selected board wipe.
I don't think with Cabal Coffers and Urborg, it would be very hard to just be like, yeah, mark every creature that's not mine. Now, next. And you can do that at instant speed, right?
No, your turn.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but still, I do like this idea a lot that you can reveal something from your hand, and it's like, it's looking at you, it's pointing out things. And then when it finally enters the battlefield, it kills all those things. That's kind of cool.
That is cool. I have to let you read this one.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely... I'm going to double fist it. All right. Atali Primal Storm. 4 red-red. Legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur. Whenever Atali Primal Storm attacks, exile the top card of each player's library. Then you may cast any number of non-land cards exiled this way without paying their mana cost. What?
It's the any number that I sort of skipped over the first time I read this.
If you have, yeah,
I thought you had to pick one.
No.
You do your own. So everyone just flips the top card of their library, and you can cast any number of them without. This is
when it attacks, not even on damage.
Yeah.
This is the kind of like the 6-mana card advantage spell I want to see in a red deck.
Yeah, this is
a red deck.
This is pretty strong. If you attack with it one time, you're gonna get a lot of value.
A lot,
off it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. I still don't think probably it's its own deck that's really great. But in that deck, you build it with Lightning Greaves and all the ways to give it haste so that you're going to play it, attack with it. You know, maybe have ways to trigger it multiple times.
Yeah.
Multiple attack steps. Mm-hmm. Atali's really good. So, all right. And the last of the Elder Dinosaurs.
How about the 12-mana card?
Well, sometimes. A lot of times it's not. Okay.
Most times it's not.
The green one. It's Galta, Primal Hunger. Oh, I just noticed they all have Primal in their name.
Storm, Death.
Quick on the uptake,
Tide,
I am.
Dawn.
All right. Primal Hunger. Mono green. 10 and green green is the casting cost. 12 mana for a 12/12. Legendary creature, Elder
Makes
Dinosaur.
Sense.
It says Galta costs X less to cast, where X is the total power of creatures you control. Oh.
Hey, now that's good.
Also has trample, which if you're going to play a 12/12, I want it to have trample.
Yeah. This is actually pretty good.
This
I
could
think.
Be a pretty easily like free.
Yeah, or at least green green is the cheapest it could cost.
Oh right, right. Because it only gets rid of.
But even if you have like six power on the board, and all of a sudden this costs six mana for a 12/12 trampler, like that's
pretty good.
I mean, if your deck is wanting to do this kind of thing, which is trample over people and play giant creatures, Galta seems.
I mean, you're playing green, so you're already more likely to have more power on the board.
I mean, there are ways to probably ramp this out by turn four or five, right?
There's probably ways to do it on turn three.
Yeah.
There's probably ways to do it on turn two. I don't know. I'm just assuming.
I'm just hedging, but yeah, totally. Yeah.
All right. I dig it.
I dig it. All right. Let's talk about some Planeswalkers, though.
This one we have to look at the phone. We don't have the cards.
I got them all. Angrath, the Flame Chain, is our first Planeswalker up on the board. Looks like we're getting a lot of Minotaur love these days, guys. 3, a black and a red for a 4 loyalty legendary Planeswalker. Angrath, he looks very angry. You can plus 1 him to have each opponent discard a card and lose 2 life. You can minus 3 him to gain control of target creature until end of turn, untap it against haste until end of turn, and sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step if it has converted mana cost 3 or less. That's a lot of text.
Mm-hmm.
And is minus 8, each opponent loses life equal to the number of cards in his or her graveyard. So the ultimate, you're never going to get there unless you doubling season this guy out.
Why are you doubling season that? Yeah.
The plus 1 is good for, like, some decks that want to do the discard thing. I know my Neheb deck would probably play Angrath because, you know, you're making cards.
Would you, though? I feel like you can get that effect for, like, way cheaper.
Yeah, probably.
Like, 5 mana to do that, and then it's certainly going to die.
Yeah.
Like, someone's just going to attack it. And then threaten effect, I don't know. I don't like this card. It's not good in EDH.
The threaten effect is interesting because it makes you sacrifice it if it's a low CMC card. So it's kind of like a 5-mana removal spell, certain things.
But I
want to
steal their biggest thing.
Yeah, it's
true. I don't want to steal their smallest thing.
Who knows? I mean, maybe you want to steal an Urkel Moldiah or something. But then you don't even get to, because it's CMC.
I mean, you would get.
I don't know.
It's bad. I don't like it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the next one. Whatley, Radiant Champion. Whatley is back, and now instead of being the red side of Naya, she's the green side of Naya. So she's 2 green and a white, Selesnya. Legendary Planeswalker Whatley comes with 3 loyalty plus 1. Put a loyalty counter on Whatley for each creature you control. Whoa, this could go
crazy
real fast.
This one you could emblem.
Yeah. Minus 1, target creature gets plus X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control.
Okay.
Minus 8, you get an emblem with whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card. So this
doesn't say non-token.
Right. This is all about creatures. This looks like it's really good in the token deck. The minus 1 gives it plus X for X number of creatures, where X is the number of creatures. That only costs 1 to do. That's pretty good.
Doesn't give it trample, though?
No.
Dang it. I think this card is pretty good in a token deck. It's also, you know, a 4-mana Planeswalker, a lot more palatable.
She's hanging out in front of us, a comma, by the way, in the art.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. You probably only have to plus it once. Like, you play it when you've got, like, 10 creatures, 10 tokens or something, plus it. It's at 13.
Yeah, how do you kill that?
It's just, yeah, that's going to be annoying to people, but I there's a much better chance to sort of ultimate this Planeswalker than most without, you know, doubling mm-hmm. seasons and stuff. And you're in green, doubling season. And then the negative 8's pretty powerful, because once you get that emblem and you're in a token deck...
Yeah, you're drawing tons of cards.
That's, like... It's going to be hard to lose because you play any of your just make a couple of tokens and you just draw cards. Like, yeah.
I'm definitely putting this in my Anathenza deck.
Yeah, I like this card quite a bit. Even just non-token but creature-based decks like Elf Ball decks could play that card and I think it would still be good.
Okay. Right. I guess we didn't mention this, but another returning effect in this set is flip enchantments. They're legendary enchantments that flip over into legendary lands that all do different kinds of crazy stuff. They're all pretty interesting for the most part, and I think a lot of players will really like this. So do you want to start it off, Josh?
Yeah, I want to say the story behind these is that they were originally going to do Masterpieces, Expeditions, that series for this block.
Right.
And so they had to create, and it was going to be, these lands were going to be the Masterpieces. Mm-hmm. And so they had to, when they decided not to do the Masterpieces anymore, or not every set anymore, they had to sort of turn them into these flip enchantment things, which is an interesting backstory. Okay.
I like it, though. It means we get another guy's cradle.
It means we get... There's some crazy stuff in here. Okay. Yeah. The first one is Hadana's Climb. It's one green blue for a legendary enchantment. It says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, you put a 1-1 counter on target creature you control. Then, if that creature has three or more 1-1 counters on it, transform Hadana's Climb. Hadana's Climb doesn't have to be the thing that put all the counters on. So if you have something else that's already putting counters on, and then Hadana just puts the last one or, you know, the sixth one or whatever, mm-hmm. it will then flip. And it becomes Winged Temple of Araska, which is a legendary land. You can tap it to add one mana of any color to your mana pool.
I believe everyone on the lands yeah. has that top ability. Yeah.
And then you can also pay one green blue and tap the Winged Temple of Araska, and target creature you control gains flying and gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is its power. So it sort of becomes a thing that pumps one of your creatures. Obviously, you're going to have a creature that's at least like a 3 power, because yeah. you put 3/1/1 counters on something.
It pumps and jumps.
Pumps and jumps. It's fine.
Yeah, it's not bad. I think this is obviously good in decks that have +1/+1 counter synergies already, and you want to outfit one particular thing.
Yeah, Voral and stuff like that.
But if anything, I just see this being really good in Limited.
Yeah, it's so good in Limited. Oh, my gosh.
This next one, though, this is a great one, I think, for a lot of EDH players. You know what?
We even have a foil one.
So I'll read the foil. Okay. It's the only exception I'll make.
I know the way to do this.
It's foil on both sides.
It's,
oh, my goodness.
It's beautiful.
One, a black and a green, Journey to Eternity. So enchantment, legendary enchantment aura. I think this is the first aura we've seen.
From this cycle.
From this cycle, yeah. Enchant creature you control. When enchanted creature dies, return it to the battlefield under your control. Then return Journey to Eternity to the battlefield transformed under your control.
So the creature dies, comes back onto the battlefield, and then this thing transforms.
Yoop. And then this comes down as well, and it turns into Aetzal, Cave of Eternity, legendary land. So again, it adds one mana of any color to your mana pool. And also, for 3, a black and a green, tap it, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Whoa, 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 whoa.
This card is really good.
So one, you get to rebuy a creature with Journey to Eternity. You probably are sacking it in a black-green deck. Like, a Marin deck is just going to love this card.
For sure.
Caridor. And then, to read the flavor text, every journey has its inevitable end, but every end is a new beginning.
And then it's kind of a second Marin or a second Caridor.
It just sits there and pumps out
bringing
creatures.
Things back from the graveyard to the battlefield. It's also in a color combination where with green, and green can untap land, so there's the chance of like doing this more than once.
Yeah.
Really good card. The next one of these flip legendaries is Path of Metal. It's red white for a legendary enchantment. It says when Path of Metal enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to each creature that doesn't have first strike, double strike, vigilance, or haste. So if you don't have one of those things on a creature, then it takes 1 damage. Sweet.
It's a token killer?
I guess. Whenever you attack with at least 2 creatures that have first strike, double strike, vigilance, and or haste, you transform it.
Why do they make it so hard for Boros?
This actually seems harder to flip than either of the other ones.
It's definitely harder to flip. Yeah. You have to build your deck around this card.
All right. Then it turns into Metzali, Tower of Triumph.
Cool looking tower, though.
Yeah. You can tap to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. Then you can pay 1 in a red and tap it, and then it deals 2 damage to each opponent. Or you can pay 2 in a white and tap it. Choose a creature at random that attacked this turn, destroy that creature.
I'm out.
Why don't they like Boros? Why couldn't this have to do with drawing cards or ramping, and why couldn't it be easier to flip? And
Imagine.
It wouldn't even be... Like, imagine that 2 in a white was just destroy target attacking creature. It still wouldn't be that great.
Yeah. Imagine if the red one was like the impulsive draw.
Yeah.
Just anything that generates value, not deal 2 damage to each opponent. I'm glad they said each opponent for us
EDH
players out there.
I guess it's 2 mana, but still.
Well, you have to tap it too, and so you can repeat the effect.
I don't.
Moving on. Profane Procession is 1 black and a white.
It's not foil.
Yeah, I got it. We'll do the other side. So it's a legendary enchantment. This one's interesting. 3, a white and a black. Exile target creature. Then, if there are 3 or more cards exile with Profane Profession, transform it. And transforms into Tomb of the Dusk Rose. By the way, it's a Lenda of the Dusk Rose. It can tap for any mana. And then, 2, a white and a black. Put a creature card exiled with this permanent onto the battlefield under your control.
That is an effect that black can kind of do, white really can't do, which is steal stuff.
Steal stuff.
Well, plus you remove it in the meantime.
By the way, this card is sweet because Josh already plays a lot of cards that are either one black and a white or two black and a white to exile a target.
I play Utter End.
Yeah, in every single chance that Josh can put Utter End and Anguish Unmaking or Vindicate in the deck, he does.
Jimmy just always assumes I have it now.
I have to. There's like five different versions of it. And now we also have Profane Profession, which does it on the battlefield. And even better, eventually, after you use it three times, you get to put them back onto the battlefield under your control. Anything you choose.
It's pretty sweet.
It is really sweet. And it's really hard to interact with as well. Right? You have to get rid of either the enchantment when it's there or when it becomes a land. It becomes even harder to get rid of, depending.
Well, it also doesn't have the clause that says until Profane Procession leaves the battlefield, right? So
yeah.
At the very least, even if they get rid of the enchantment, they don't get the things that were exiled back, which a lot of cards like this, like,
right.
You know, O-ring
will return
and that.
It to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so you just get rid of it. And then the upside is if you do manage to flip it, you eventually get that stuff. You know, it's only creatures, so it's not quite as good as Utter and Anguish Unmaking for versatility, but the fact that you can eventually, you know, it's going to open up some doorways that you wouldn't have. Like, you can get value stuff.
Much value stuff.
You know, like Oracle of Moldiah and things that maybe black-white wants or needs. All right, the last one is Storm the Vault. It's two blue and red for Legendary Enchantment, of course. It says, whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, you create a colorless treasure artifact token with, we know what treasures do. At the beginning of your end step, if you control five or more artifacts, just artifacts, they don't have to be treasures, you transform Storm the Vault. So it doesn't seem super hard to flip. You just have to connect with the opponent a couple times, or just, you don't even have to. You can just have five artifacts, never have make a treasure. It'll still, oh no, you have to make at least one treasure.
At least one, yeah. I think so.
No. At the beginning of your end step, if you have five or more artifacts.
Okay.
So boom.
It's not conditional. Okay.
It turns into Vault of Catlacan. Man, these names. It's a legendary lamb, of course. I want to go to the vault, though, because there's, it looks like Smaug's.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of treasure in there.
Yeah, it looks like the One Ring is in there somewhere. You can tap it, of course, to add one mana of any color to your mana pool, or you can tap it, add blue to your mana pool for each artifact you control.
Hey, I've seen that card before. It's
banned. Yeah, it's banned.
So while the Growing Rites of Itlamok was a Gaia's Cradle functional quote-unquote reprint that we saw in the last set of Ixalan, this card is a functional reprint of Talarian Academy, which is banned in our format, which you tap it to add blue to your mana pool for each artifact you control. The thing is, it's a blue-red card. So you can't play it in like your mono blue decks or whatever, but it's still
blue red's kind of the artifact colors now. Yeah, and also, like, I don't think it's that much less powerful than Talarian Academy because Talarian Academy is only good when you have five artifacts or so. Well, this flips when you have five artifacts or so. It seems amazing.
It's it doesn't help you push you towards it, but at the same time,
no, it does because if you deal combat damage,
You know, the nice thing about these lands too is that they can tap for regular mana. So like your
of any color,
sometimes you play Gaia's Cradle, like and board wipe means it's not a land anymore. So
that Storm of the Vault's really good. Yeah. I think it's probably the best of the bunch as far as power level. Although Journey to Eternity and Profane Procession both seem really good.
I really like the black white one.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we're moving to black.
Black. So, Dead Man's Chest. One and a black for an enchantment aura. Enchant creature an opponent controls. When enchanted creature dies, exile cards to equal to its power from the top of its owner's library. You may cast non-land cards from among them for as long as they remain exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast those spells. So, if you're playing this on like a 10-power creature, you exile 10 cards, and those cards, if they're in exile, remain open to you for the rest of the game.
That's pretty sweet.
That is pretty sweet. And you can pay mana of any color to cast them. Obviously, you don't get them for free, but still.
How many cards do you think you get on average that you can cast?
If you did like five, you probably get like two or three.
Yeah, you probably get 2.5 on average or something.
Yeah, out of like a 5-power creature. I think you divide it by half and then round down.
Still, that's pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, it's also a 2-mana card that could get you a lot of card advantage, especially in colors you don't have. And that's the kind of thing I always like to see.
Yeah, I like it. And you're in the color that's killing creatures a lot. Mm-hmm. So, all right, the next one is Forerunner of the Coalition. I want to say this is a cycle. There's one of these for each of the major tribes, Merfolk, Pirate, Vampire, Dinosaur. We're not necessarily going to talk about all of them, but these are the type of cards that, like, well, if you're building a vampire deck, find the vampire version of this, and there's a good chance you want it.
Yep.
It's a 2 in a black for a 2/2 human pirate. When Forerunner of the Coalition enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a pirate card, reveal it, then shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. So it mystical tutors
for
a pirate card. or a changeling card.
Right.
Whenever another pirate enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses one life.
That's not bad.
Yeah. I could see this in pirate decks or the type of decks that have like conspiracy or arcane adaptation. Is that mm-hmm. the new blue one?
Yeah, yeah.
And are sort of changing all their cards into pirates and stuff like that. Yep. I don't know. Not a lot to say about besides that.
Yeah. And there's one of these in each of the tribes, so just keep an eye out for them. We won't talk about all of them. All right. This is a common, and I don't know why I put this on there, but I like these kind of cards. Two in a black sorcery. Each opponent loses one life for each creature you control. It's a really cheap version of something like kind of like Insanguinate, except in this case it's based off of your deck. So if you're like a token deck, it could be a really fast and easy win con because it's each opponent, but it's a common. It's not great.
It's also, you know, when you're in a token deck, you're always looking for ways to have an alternate win condition that's not combat in case somebody gets yeah. out, like, you know,
propagandas
and stuff like that on you. And so it could be, you know, based on meta, something you think about. The next one is Mastermind's Acquisition. It's two black for a sorcery. It says, choose one. Search your library for a card, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So Diabolic Tutor. Or choose a card from outside the game and put it into your hand.
Yeah, so usually the wishing or the burning wishes and all those spells require you to do a specific kind of card. This is any card from outside the game. And I don't know, again, this is entirely dependent on your playgroup, whether or not you guys have sideboards or if you're just allowed to take any card that you own from outside the game, like it says here. So up to you all how you play this.
There's a rule, and I think we referenced it because of Unstable and Spike, but it's called Rule 13, and it basically says you have to talk to the group before you play or your playgroup for what your ground rules are going to be for the wish-type cards, the cards that go get things out from outside the game.
Burning Wish, Living Wish, yeah, all of that.
So talk to your peeps.
This card, though. Ooh, I love this card. This may be the best Descender, actually.
Oh, yeah. Wait. We've got to do the other card.
Right.
Just because, you know, alphabetical order. All right. So the next card is Pitiless Plunderer. 3 and a black for a human pirate. It's a 1/4. It says, whenever another creature you control dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token. I think this card is actually kind of nuts. In any deck that's running like Ashnod's Altar and things like that, it doesn't say non-token creature. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever got, probably like Alenda really wants this card. If you've ever got like 5, 6, 7 tokens out and you're going to sack them to Ashnod's, mm-hmm. you just get the treasure tokens. You could use it with Revel in Riches. But even just like sacking it for additional value, you're already going to sack stuff, yeah. get treasure tokens and ramp. I just think this card, any Aristocrats type deck that have Blood Artist or Zulaport Cutthroat and those type of things in it would look at a card like this, I think.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Super powerful.
Getting that extra mana. Not to mention a lot of times if you use Ashnod's Altar, you want colored mana, so that's a way to get that colored mana.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, it's a really good point.
All right, Twilight Prophet. This is the card I was getting all crazy about. 2 black for a 2/4 creature vampire cleric with flying. It's our first instant of Ascend. So again, if you control 10 or more permanents, you immediately get the City's Blessing for the rest of the game. Now, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have the City's Blessing, reveal the top card of your library and put it into your hand. Each opponent loses X life and you gain X life, where X is that card's converted mana cost. So this is similar to what that one Sorin did.
Yes.
Which is revealing the top card of your library.
It's sort of reverse Bob's.
Yeah, it makes everyone else lose the life, and then you gain the life.
And you get the card.
I would play this in a Rakdos deck.
I would. So you're like, I think I would just play cards. This in a black deck.
Yeah.
This is really good. It's only 4 mana. Again, Ascend is not going to be terribly hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
And the value is insane. Gain life, everybody loses life, and you draw a card.
Yeah.
Really, even if you just get one trigger off it, you're fine with
that. Yeah, for 4 mana to do all that, you might have a total life loss of like 15 across the table, depending on the card you flip. Seems pretty good.
Yeah, let's say it's just a 3 CMC card.
Mm-hmm.
You gain 3, everybody else loses 3. That's 12.
Yeah.
That's 12, you know, that's a 12 point differential. And you draw the card. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like this card.
All right, get hungry.
All right, the next one is Vona's Hunger.
Looks like Sprankle.
It does.
I'm trying to beat us in that game. She came pretty close.
She was scary. She looks scary like this, too.
Yeah.
All right. It's 2 and a black for an instant. It has Ascend. If you control 10 or more permanents, you get the City's Blessing for the rest of the game. Each opponent sacrifices a creature. You just do that. But if you have City's Blessing, then instead, each opponent sacrifices half the creatures he or she controls, rounded up. 3 mana you could kill. Oh, boy.
Not to mention it's an instant. So.
And it's each opponent. It's not you. A lot of edict effects are
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an instant.
I mean, like, I've seen this so many times where on an empty board, someone... okay, here's the thing. Fleshbag Marauder, you play in a lot of decks, right? And that's exact. And it includes you sacrificing a creature.
I mean, it's the creature you played in that instance, but it's three mana.
Yeah, but Vona's Hunger. I've seen so many people play Consecrated Sphinx onto an empty board. You could just get them.
Just get them. Yeah, I like this card a lot.
I mean, here's the thing. That's why this card is really good. It's good without Ascend. It's decent without Ascend, and it's really good with Ascend.
I mean, there's a lot of times just on turn... it's coming around to you on turn three, and people just played like a value, like Birds of Paradise, you know,
they've
something.
One or two things out.
Yeah, they put their Thrasios out. Yeah. They put their Vile Smasher out, and you just go, yeah, I'll just kill all three of those things.
For three mana.
Yep. I like it. I like it a lot.
Puts them way back.
I like it a lot. All
Let's go on to everyone's least favorite color, blue.
They got a couple of crazy ones. Okay, the first one is Crafty Cut Purse. This card is interesting. It's three and a blue for a 2/2 human pirate. It has flash. When Crafty Cut Purse enters the battlefield, each token that would be created under an opponent's control this turn is created under your control instead. So, you know.
You steal tokens.
Avenger of Zendikar, that triggers on the stack. Boom, flash in Crafty Cut Purse. I get all those plant tokens. Thank
Doubling
you.
Season, you get the tokens that the doubles
Oh my
make.
Gosh.
Let's say someone's trying to go infinite with Kiki Jiki and like a Zealous Conscripts. Depending on how they order their triggers, you could steal all of them. If they're like, all right, this is the order I'm going to do. I'm going to use Kiki Jiki to make Zealous Conscripts. All right.
Yeah, because they would have to do it while... a lot of times
in like response to the trigger. Or I don't know. Either way.
No, because it has to, with Zealous, it wouldn't work.
Zealous
wouldn't
work. Something like Pestermite, yeah, where I think you...
No, it has to enter the battlefield.
You know what? Either way, you're stealing tokens, and it's pretty sweet.
I think there's just a lot of... look at like Alenda. They choose to sack it or whatever and let it go to the graveyard, and they're going to make them, you know, 12 1/1 vampires with lifelink. Those are my 12
you get them.
Vampires.
With Mine now, yeah.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I think if there was a couple powerful token decks in your meta, then it'd be worth looking at.
Yeah.
This next one.
Induced Amnesia. This is two and a blue for an enchantment. It's Jace throwing some thoughts into Frasca's head here. When Induced Amnesia enters the battlefield, target player exiles all cards from his or her hand face down, then draws them any cards. When Induced Amnesia is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return the exiled cards to their owner's hand. Now, this card doesn't seem like at front, you're like, okay, sure, it's like a windfall, and then you exile your hand.
I remember we read this and we didn't think much of it, and then we had a chance to actually see it in play.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Those cards stay exiled, and if you can get rid of that enchantment later, then you're drawing a ton more cards.
Let's say you have seven cards in your hand. You'll exile seven, draw seven. So
Windfall.
Yeah. So that's fine. Windfall is a good card.
Unless you wanted to discard the cards, but let's assume you're not.
And then if you can get rid of Induced Amnesia, if you can put it into the graveyard from the battlefield, you'll have 14 cards in your hand, right? So you just drew seven. Also, think of this in like Brago or something where you can just flicker it.
Oh, and keep drawing.
And immediately go through your deck just super fast.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just if you're looking for certain cards. A lot of times, you know, how many times have we been in this situation where it's like, I need a board wipe.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care what else is in my hand because if I need a board wipe or I'm going to die or I need a counterspell or I need a blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, you can sort of do things like that. I think this card is actually really, really good. And then there's the instances, because we're talking about something modest, seven cards. You're in blue. How many times have you been there with 20 cards in your hand?
Yeah.
If you're looking for a certain card and you can draw 20 for three mana,
you're going to get there.
You're going to find that card.
Yeah. So hopefully.
Yeah. I like that card a lot. All right. The next one is Release to the Wind. Two and a blue for an instant. Exile target non-land permanent. For as long as that card remains exiled, its owner may cast it without paying its mana cost. This is a way for you to sort of flicker your own stuff in a weird way.
Yeah.
Over an installment plan.
Sometimes you want to get rid of a blocker or something, then you can exile it with that. Or
also, if something of yours got stolen.
Yeah. The thing is, if you do it to an opponent, they will be able to just cast it again. But
yeah,
because
it
says
its owner may cast it without paying its mana cost.
So it's an interesting, it's a little fringe, but I think you would use it mostly on your own stuff, and then you can obviously hold it and wait. You know, this card, as long as it's exiled, again, it sits there for the rest of the game if you wanted to. It doesn't need to happen that same turn.
There's a lot of decks where, like, you just want to protect one thing, and this could be protection for that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Seafloor Oracle is our next blue card. 2 blue blue for a Merfolk Wizard, 2/3. Whenever a Merfolk you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. So obviously I put this into my Kamana deck. There are not many effects that do this specifically for Merfolk, so we thought we would mention it here.
Yeah, I think it's a good one because if you the way this is written, am I wrong? Where 5 Merfolk all hit a player, you draw 5 cards.
Yes.
That's drawing a lot. I mean, cards. That's pretty great. Okay, this next one is...
Especially because they all have unblockable shenanigans usually.
Yeah. This next one's... it's insane.
I love this one. It's crazy. I love this one a lot.
I don't like cards like this in general because I just think they lead to infinite turns, which is what this is going to
do. Yes, this 100% will. Yeah, 100% will.
So it's Time Stream Navigator. It's 1 and a blue for a 1/1. It has Ascend. Again, you want 10 or more permanents to get City's Blessing. You can pay 2 blue blue and tap the Time Stream Navigator. Then you put Time Stream Navigator on the bottom of its owner's library. Take an extra turn after this one. You can only activate this ability if you have City's Blessing.
This is like a win condition against being milled out, almost, if you have the ability to give it haste or something.
Just
you
boom.
Can just,
yeah.
Comes on the battlefield, take another turn. Take another turn.
True.
Take another
I turn. Think it's more of a win condition of just take a million turns.
Another thing, too, is that extra turn effects usually cost 5 mana, so having this cost 4 is nice. Yeah.
This card seems insane.
Yeah, a lot of extra turns being
You don't even have to walk through all the combos. You just know there's a lot.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next color, green. Everyone's favorite, green.
It is kind of everyone's favorite. I remember when green was everyone's least favorite.
I always loved green.
No, I mean, I love... Oh, yeah, well.
But not as much as red.
Back in the old days, it was really bad, though.
Yeah, that's true. You had, like, old man Gaia, right? Like, Gaia's...
Gaia's Liege.
Liege, yeah.
I remember, saving up to trade my friend for that card. And yeah. It's a horrible card.
Yeah, well, I remember because I was just like, oh, it could be huge.
Yeah, I think if every forest I have, it could be an, you know,
2020.
Whatever.
2020.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, then they go...
Never dies.
My friends are like, so what? I just terror it.
Yeah. Lightning Bolt? Nope. All right. Path of Discovery. 3 and a green. Enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, it explores.
This is going to be a staple card.
Yeah, 100%. Just immediate value off of every single creature that comes on the battlefield. Game Nights, you will see. It's good. It's powerful.
He means the next Game Nights.
Yeah, not this one.
We're going to beep that out so they didn't hear it anyway.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry, guys. You can't hear
he
it.
He did something.
I used this card in Game Nights, and I thought it was great. There's going to be a lot of value generated from this.
This is going to be a card that goes in most green decks. I mean, they have to be creature-based decks. Yeah. But, I mean, it even works with tokens. It doesn't say non-token creature.
Yeah.
So if you create 10 Sapperlings, think of Avenger of Zendikar. The value of this is very high.
Especially because you can just keep one of the cards on top that you know is a non-land permanent.
Just give them all +1/+1. Or you can just draw the lands. You're like, I would like some lands.
Yeah, right. Let's say you make 10 tokens and you're like, I just need to draw through my deck. And if the card isn't incredibly useful to you at that point, just bin it. Draw the next one. Like, great, it's a land. This, that, you can just get tons of cards in your hand.
I just want burgeoning in this in play. That's all I want.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
I mean,
burgeoning is good with this card.
Yeah. This next one's a little... There's some combos with this thing.
Yeah.
It's Polyraptor. It's 6 green green for a 5/5 dinosaur. It has Enrage. Whenever Polyraptor is dealt damage, create a token that's a copy of Polyraptor. So the token will have the Enrage ability.
Mm-hmm.
So then when either the token or the original Polyraptor take damage, they'll make more. So it starts doubling. One of the combos people were mentioning on Twitter was Aether Flash.
Yep. Deals 2 damage to a creature every time it enters the battlefield. So as soon as it creates one copy of Polyraptor, it creates another, and that one takes damage, and then boom, you're off to it. Infinite Polyraptors.
Yeah.
Dropping hot mixtapes.
As long as you got haste, you're going to win that one, probably.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you're playing red-green, so you better have some kind of haste.
That's true. What are you doing otherwise? Yeah. There's a lot of other sort of combos with this card, but that's kind of a very simple one.
Yeah. 8 mana, though, for a 5/5 is a little dangerous.
Yeah, I still don't think it's good because of that. But
yeah. All right. Tendershoot Dryad, 4 and a green for a Dryad 2/2 with Ascend. At the beginning of each upkeep, create a 1/1 green sapling creature token. That, in general, has been a pretty powerful card in the past. Was that one nature is something, the big green guy that doesn't?
Yeah.
Either way.
It's each upkeep, we should mention there. So that means if you're playing in a 4-player game, that's your upkeep and the other 3 players' upkeep.
That's a lot of...
That's... Just that text alone is very powerful.
Yeah, and of course, Sapperlings you control get +2/+2 as long as you have the City's Blessing. So now they're all 3/3s.
And it's very easy to get City's Blessing
because
the Sapperlings are permanents on the board.
Ha-ha.
So that seems pretty good.
Combo. Wait.
Combo. Whoa, what a hit. What was that noise?
I don't know.
It was a piece of paper, but it sounded like a hammer.
It donked on something.
Yeah, this card, and it's only 5 mana. I think it's actually, like, you play it, and you're going to get at least one Sapperling, but provided it gets back to you, you're going to have made 6 power on the first rotation of the table.
Yeah, and probably get Ascend at that point.
In which case, you've actually made, what, 10 power.
Yeah,
got
and
there.
5 things and 5 permanents, and if you had 5 mana to cast this, guess what? They're all 3/3s. Boom, attack time.
Pow.
This next one's fun.
I think this card's actually pretty good. So the next one's Wayward Swordtooth. It's 2 and a green for a 5/5 dinosaur. It has Ascend. It says you may play an additional land on each of your turns. Then it says Wayward Swordtooth can't attack or block unless you have City's Blessing. So it's not really a 5/5 until you have at least 10 permanents. But you're playing additional lands each turn. Mm-hmm. I actually would consider, it's kind of like Explore.
Yeah.
Just costs 2 more mana. And I think that is almost worth it in the decks that want multiples of that
effect.
Yeah, like, yeah. You want Burgeoning and you want, what's the creature? Oh, gosh.
Azusa. Seeking but not lost. Azusa.
Lost but seeking. And there's Mina and Den, and there's, you know,
yeah.
There's those decks that just want a lot of, you know, Gitrog Monster probably wants stuff like that. So,
right. Yeah. Gitrog wants this next one, though. World Shaper, 3 and a green for a 3/3 Merfolk Shaman. Whenever World Shaper attacks, you may put the top 3 cards of your library into the graveyard. When World Shaper dies, put all land cards from your graveyard onto the battlefield tapped. Woo! Cool.
They don't have to be put there by World Shaper either. Right. They can just be
put there.
You can
by
just
the
be
Gitrog
a deck
monster
that has a lot of dredge and stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Gitrog, yeah, which has a lot of dredge. And then boom, just get 20 lands into play. That seems pretty good.
All right, let's move on to the next color. Let me get this piece of paper out of the way. What the?
You know, a few people have asked me about this first card. It's
yes.
We're moving on to red. And it's like because it has the word blood in it, because I hate Blood Moon, that I would dislike it. But this doesn't do anything like what Blood Moon does. This is Blood Sun. It's 2 and a red for an enchantment. When Blood Sun enters the battlefield, draw a card.
I'm playing it. That's all
the
I
fact that it has that
is pretty big.
Means that it's almost a free roll from there, right? Like,
yeah,
you may as well play this card, depending on your deck. It says all lands lose all abilities except mana abilities.
Right.
This is sneaky good depending on how you build your deck. You could really take advantage of it because things like bounce lands.
Yeah.
First of all, bounce land won't come into play tapped.
Mm-hmm.
It'll come in untapped because that's an ability. And it won't bounce another land. So you just get a land that taps for 2 for no downside.
Nothing, yeah. Here's the thing, though. It's really good against your decks in general because you have tons of utility lands. I play a ton of utility lands.
It doesn't bother me, though, because it doesn't turn off my ability to kill Bloodsun.
True. That's a good point. Yeah, it does make everything into a mountain.
It means like, oh, my green-blue land still taps for green-blue.
Yeah.
I can now cast Crocin Grip.
Here's the thing, though. It also makes everyone else's bounce lands good, too, then, right?
True, but, I mean, people don't play a ton of bounce lands, in, you know, at least in our playgroup.
Yeah.
Unless you specifically have a reason to, so...
If you're playing against a lot of Homeward Paths and, like, lots of Maze of Iths and you don't want any of those cards to function, then
yep.
I could see Blood Sun being playable. Otherwise, it is a little dangerous, but you do cantrip off it. You draw a card when you play it, so...
I like it. I like it a lot in the right deck, of course.
Yeah.
This next card, as you've written all
Brass's
over it.
Brass's Bounty. I'm playing this right now. 6 and a red. For each land you control, create a colorless treasure artifact token with Sacrifice Star Effect. Add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. For 7 mana, if I have 10 lands, I make 10 treasures. And here's the thing. Normally, this kind of card is bad. Like, in terms of, like, make immediate mana. But here's the thing. These treasures stick around.
They count as artifacts on the battlefield.
If you had 10 lands and you tap 7 to pay for this, now you still have 13 mana at your disposal. So you can still do something this turn for playing a 7 mana card. That, I think, is why I like it the most. And also in, like, decks that want to just generate a ton of red mana or mana in general, Brass's Bounty seems pretty good. Because you
Not
can use
that.
The mana that same turn.
Not just that. I think there's a lot of decks that just care about the number of artifacts they have. Things that refer to the number of artifacts. You can sacrifice artifacts to do certain effects.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to use the treasure.
Revel in Riches is just like an instant
Revel
win.
In Riches, yeah. If you have like Vedalken Orrery out, if you have this in your hand, you probably get to win with Revel in Riches, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think this card is really cool.
Yeah.
I like it. All right, the next one is Dire Fleet Daredevil. If you see us staring at our phones, I want to say we're looking at the cards. We're not texting.
I mean, I'm texting.
All right, the next one is Dire Fleet Daredevil. It's 1 and a red for a 2/1 human pirate. It has first strike.
Awesome art.
Yeah. When Dire Fleet Daredevil enters the battlefield, exile target instant or sorcery card from an opponent's graveyard. You may cast that card this turn, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast that spell. If that card would be put into a graveyard this turn, exile it instead. It doesn't have flash, but otherwise it's kind of snapcaster for your opponent's
graveyard. I think this is sweet.
Yeah.
I love it. Because you can do sorceries too, obviously, because it's at sorcery speed. I think this is going to see a lot of standard play if people want to do red deck wins, because it's just a 2-mana 2/1 first strike on turn 2.
Yep.
But also just gets a ton of additional value later on in the game if you start flooding out.
So. It's just, there's a lot of times where, you know, you can just get access to an effect that you couldn't get based on the colors in your deck.
This is the kind of stuff I want to see in red. Card advantage. It's still conditional and it has like a timer on it, but it's card advantage nonetheless. All right. Forerunner of the Empire, 3 and a red for a 1/3 human soldier. When Forerunner enters. Oh, this is the dinosaur version of the card we talked about earlier. So Forerunner.
Cycle, yep.
Yeah. Enters, finds a dinosaur, puts it on top of your library, grabs a land.
Yep. There's one for a vampire and there's also one for merfolk. Go ahead.
Rekindling Phoenix. 2 red for a 4/3 creature Phoenix. Flying, when Rekindling Phoenix dies, create a 0/1 red elemental creature token with, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice this creature and return target card named Rekindling Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste until end of turn. So normally these, like, Phoenixes, the ones that come back, are just okay. This one actually gives you a low creature token, which is kind of cool, and it can block for you. Otherwise, at the beginning of your upkeep, you just sack it, and then you get a Rekindling Phoenix back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. It's another in the cycle of Phoenixes, which all have sort of weird, like, different Phoenixes, ways to come back.
This one's not bad, because you don't have to like pay an exorbitant amount of mana to get it back. You actually get a creature out of it, which is kind of cool.
The next one is Silverclad for Rostodons. 5 red for an 8/5 dinosaur. Has Enrage. Whenever Silverclad for Rostodons is dealt damage, each opponent sacrifices a permanent.
Cool.
Tim deck.
Yeah. Tim deck. Aetherflash-esque deck. Pyrohemia.
Oh, Pestilence.
Especially if the Pyrohemia kills creatures, too.
Oh, gosh.
Right? Like, the Pyrohemia is destroying creatures, and then, like, crap, I have to sacrifice other permanents? Ugh.
I mean, they got a permanent. It's not non-land, so...
Yeah.
Like, you could... Yeah. I think there are definitely some combos with this thing where you just... They're just done. They just don't have stuff.
Yeah.
I like it. Me likey.
Tilanali's Summoner is our last red card. 1 red for a 1/1 with Ascend. Whenever Tilanali's Summoner attacks, you may pay X in a red. If you do, create X 1/1 red elemental creature tokens that are tapped and attacking. At the beginning of the next end step, exile those tokens unless you have the City's Blessing. By the way, you can just pay to get the City's Blessing, and then you just keep a bunch of 1/1 red elemental creature tokens that are tapped and attacking.
Yeah, the thing about Ascend is it doesn't really care when it happens. If you have 10 permanents at any instant for just a quarter of a second, doesn't matter, that, boom, you get City's Blessing.
Hashtag bless, just like
that. Yeah, so you just attack with this, tap red and 5, get 5 1/1s that are tapped and attacking, and at that moment, you have City's Blessing, right?
Yeah, you probably should have City's Blessing at that point.
And then they stick around. Yeah, this card seems actually really good. It comes out pretty early.
Yeah.
And we're just in a format where there's just often somebody you can attack for basically free.
Mm-hmm.
Especially sort of mid and early game. I like it. It's also tapped in attacking, right? So you get around Propaganda. You only would have to pay for Tilanali's Summoner.
Right, right. Good point. I like it.
It's pretty good.
All right, let's move on to our last color of the 5. It's Baffling End in white, and this is 1 white for an enchantment. When Baffling End enters the battlefield, exile target creature an opponent controls with converted mana cost 3 or less. And when Baffling End leaves the battlefield, target opponent creates a 3/3 green dinosaur creature token with trample. 2 mana, exile a creature card, CMC 3 or less. It's going to see a lot of probably standard play, and maybe make it into modern. But it's interesting because when it leaves the battlefield, a different opponent you can choose gets a 3/3 dinosaur.
I didn't even notice that. It's target opponent. So you'd be like, yeah. So even if you... Oh, that's interesting because it sort of disincentivizes somebody removing it.
Yeah.
Because you won't get that 3/3. I'll give it to somebody else.
It's baffling.
Oh, I didn't read that.
That's the only reason it's on here. The first part is like, whatever.
I was wondering, you put it on the list. I was like, I don't get it. But that last part actually makes it interesting.
Yeah.
At least makes it kind of fun. Yeah. The next one is Bishop of Binding.
Oh, yes.
It's 3 white for a 1/1 vampire cleric. Man, vampire 4-mana 1/1s keep happening. I don't think that's... All right. When Bishop of Binding enters the battlefield, exile target creature and opponent controls until Bishop of Binding leaves the battlefield. It's Fiend Hunter, Banisher Priest type of deal. But it has another little twist. Whenever Bishop of Binding attacks, target vampire gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the power of the exiled card. So if you get rid of Vorinclex, then all of a sudden...
It's like 8.
When this attacks, you get +8/+8.
Well, I would give it to Alenda and then sack her.
Good point.
There you go. Next up, we have
Big dreams here at the command zone.
Next up, we have Radiant Destiny, 2W for an enchantment with Ascend. As Radiant Destiny enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Creatures you control of the chosen type get +1/+1. As long as you have the Deceit's Blessing, they also have Vigilance. So this is actually really good for tribal, just 2W for a +1/+1 across the board, and then giving them Vigilance as well is pretty good.
Yeah, I read this wrong the first time. Your creatures get +1/+1 of that type no matter what.
Yeah.
It's the Vigilance that's tied to the City's Blessing. It's okay. I think there's a lot of good...
you can do a lot of different things in tribal. This is one of many.
Okay. The next one is Slaughter the Strong.
This card is nuts.
It's 1W for a sorcery. Each player chooses any number of creatures he or she controls with total power 4 or less, then sacrifices all other creatures he or she controls. So that's it. You get to keep 4 power out of maximum total from your board. Everything else has got to go.
Yep.
If all you have is a 6/6, that's going.
Okay, the last card we're talking about here in white is Trapjaw Tyrant. Woo! 3W for a creature dinosaur within rage. Whenever Trapjaw Tyrant is dealt damage, exile target creature and opponent controls until Trapjaw Tyrant leaves the battlefield. Yeah.
We talked about it for Zakama because Zakama can ping the Trapjaw Tyrant.
Yeah, and start removing stuff.
Yeah, it's dangerous though because then when they board wipe, they get it all back because the Trapjaw Tyrant goes away.
Yeah. It is interesting if you're playing mono white to have even more like, hey, look, we can just keep exiling things under this. I don't know. I don't love it, but it is an interesting card indeed. It seems like a pain in the butt to deal with.
Yeah. Okay, we're on to artifacts now. Oh man, this first artifact.
Oh.
Take a deep breath, everybody. This one's good.
This one's ridiculous. It takes a while to set up, but hey.
Does it?
5 turns? Well, untapping, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. Azor's Gateway.
Also, what it does... Never mind. You're right. This card's good.
It also only costs 2 mana, so it's 2 mana.
Oh, it's so good.
For a legendary artifact. If you... All right, we'll talk about it. 2 mana, legendary artifact.
A flip card.
It's one of the flip cards. You pay 1 mana and tap the Azor's Gateway, and then you draw a card, and then exile a card from your hand. So you loot, except for you're not putting in the graveyard, you're exiling it. Just alone, that would be a fine card.
Mm-hmm.
2 mana, it's cheap, and it's going to filter your draws and get you some value, get rid of lands when you don't want them, or cards that are high CMC early in the game. Then it says, if cards with 5 or more different converted mana costs are exiled with Azor's Gateway, you gain 5 life, okay, and then you untap Azor's Gateway and transform it. You untap it? They didn't even want to have the downside of like when you put the 5th card there.
Oh, right, yeah. Then sorry, you have to least, wait.
Yeah, so you flip it, it turns into a legendary land called Sanctum of the Sun. Hold on to your butts. Tap it, add X mana of any one color to your mana pool, where X is your life total. Your life total.
You could add like 20 mana right here with this single.
You could add 40.
I mean, considering you're spending some time exiling 5 different cards with different CMCs from
you could add 140 if you're an Alora or something.
Look, you can just win the game in so many different ways with 140 mana at your disposal.
This card's insane. At least they could have made the original artifact, the Azor's Gateway, cost like 5 mana.
Yeah, I do like it.
The fact that it costs 2, and you only have to do this 5 times. You just do it 5 times.
Yeah.
And on the 5th time, you use it.
Yeah.
It's not like 5, then wait a turn.
It's 5 and immediately tap for your life total.
And then you've got Fate Stitcher. You've got Cure's Follower. You've got like, there's a lot of ways to just on like turn 3 or 4, when you play this, untap it enough times to just flip it.
Yeah.
And then you're 40 mana of any one color. And also, it's not even colorless mana.
Of a single color, and you can play this card in any deck as well. That's the crazy thing. Gateway can go in any deck.
I don't say that. We rarely say this, but this card seems too powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only downside is you have to do 5 different CMCs out of your hand, but even then, like, most decks will have different options for you, and you're drawing cards.
It's not hard, so because it says different. It's not even... It could have been sequential. Like, you have to make a straight. Like, you have to have 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I guess people can see this coming, but people aren't packing individual artifact removal necessarily. Like,
it's a 2-drop, so even if they do... it's not that worse. I mean, it's
and you're still gaining value off it.
Yes, because you're looting. It would be one thing if you didn't draw the card, if you just had to exile the card from your hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, then it's a big risk, because I have to exile five cards. I'm down five cards. If after the fourth card somebody Vandal Blasts, that's horrible. But not here. Yeah. You're actually gaining value by looting the whole time.
Yeah, and I would play this in the limited deck just to, if I wanted to loot more.
Yeah, I think it's...
Okay.
Okay.
Moving on. Golden Guardian, 4 mana, 4/4 defender, artifact creature, golem. You can pay 2 mana to have it fight another target creature you control, like Trapjaw Tyrant. When Golden Guardian dies this turn, return it to the battlefield, transformed under your control, and it becomes a legendary golem land. It just says land.
This is the only one that's not a legendary land.
Yeah, sure. You can tap it.
Goldforged Garrison, by the way.
Oh, that's right. And the art is ridiculously cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can tap it to add 2 mana of any one color to your mana pool. That's pretty neat. And you can pay 4 to tap it to create a 4/4 colorless golem artifact creature token. So you pump out more golems, and you also get 2 mana of any one color to your mana pool.
I actually think it's pretty good just as a sort of Temple of the False God type of land. Here's the thing about, it's a 4/4 for 4 with Defender. You pay 2, and it fights another creature you control, right? And then when it dies, you transform it.
Here's the thing. You need to have a creature that has at least 5 toughness, otherwise this thing is killing it. You know, because it's fighting it. So you could 2-for-1 yourself just to flip it. So it's a little tough. Like, you need to have
a 5/5.
4/5 at the very least to keep the creature you're fighting. So it's interesting. Moving on.
You can do this, though, in response to, like, a board wipe or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's going to die anyway. Boom, boom. And you can fight multiple things. So...
Actually, you know what? You don't even need to be a 4/5 if you like block with this and then pay the 2 mana to fight something with, you know, a couple of power or whatever.
And like I said, you can fight 2 things. So you can say, I'm going to fight this and that, activate it twice. So in response to a board wipe, if you have the mana, I'm going to fight my Oracle of Maldaya and whatever else that has 2 power.
That's a good point. And start flip rebuilding.
It. Yeah. And it just turns into a land that taps for 2 at the very least. And yeah, making tokens is good eventually. I like the card. All right, the next one is another really interesting card.
Yeah.
The Immortal Sun. It costs 6 mana. It's a legendary artifact. Players can't activate Planeswalker loyalty abilities. Have we ever seen that before?
I don't think
there's been a card that just turns off all Planeswalkers. Yeah. At the beginning of your draw step, draw an additional card. Spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. Creatures you control get +1/+1. What else? Hey, guys, look at this card. We've got room on it. What else should we put on there? What's another thing that cards do?
Make cards cheaper.
Okay. All right. Well, actually, I lied. We have room for one more thing. What else do cards do?
It's tribal time. Let's give them all +1/+1.
All right. Sold. Mr. Rosewater, what do you think? Print it.
It's interesting. It's 6 mana, obviously, but drawing additional card each turn is great. People play cards all the time just to do that. Spells you cast 1 less to cast. It's pretty nice, right, overall? And the whole +1/+1 is just a nice cherry on top. It's like Mirari's Wake a little bit there.
I almost wish it was like a 3 mana artifact that only had the first ability. Because I like that exists, right? That there's a way to combat Super Friends decks. Right now, there's not a super great way, although our format handles it well in that everyone just attacks the Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the card.
Yeah, I do too.
It's not crazy powerful.
All right. Silent Gravestone is our last artifact and card of the set that we'll be talking about in the review. It's 1 mana for an artifact. Cards in graveyards can't be the targets of spells or abilities.
It's already really good.
Yeah, for 1 mana, by the way. 4 mana, tap it, exile Silent Gravestone, and all cards from all graveyards draw a card. So it replaces itself. This is a great sideboard tech card for just your meta. I could see this being played in all kinds of formats.
Yeah, this is going to be definitely... Well, right now in Standard, you've got one of the decks is the Godfarrow's Gift decks.
Yep.
Which this won't allow it to do anything.
Yep.
This, like Marin, none of that stuff works with this card out. I think you could just main deck this card. Just there's enough graveyard shenanigans stuff.
Yeah, as long as you're not, you know, obviously using your graveyard like crazy, so.
Yeah, true. I mean, You wouldn't put it in decks that have a lot of that. You could have a little bit, though, because you get to choose when to play this.
Yeah, it's true.
I like this card.
All right. Well, let's talk to the best of. We love doing this. We got to talk about the best of the cards so far. All the new legendaries, I think the answer is easily Sakama.
It's Sakama.
Yeah.
I guess Azor is next, but the gap between that. Like, Sakama is one of the better commanders.
Yeah. Like best overall card, though, I think Azor's Gateway has to be up there.
I think it is. The only other one is maybe the extra turn blue tap. What's it called? Timekeeper Navigator.
Yeah, Time Navigator. Or the six and a red make a lot of mana.
That card is cool. I don't think it's powerful in the
same
way. It's
not the best overall card, though. I think Azor's Gateway has to get there because it's colorless. You can play it in every single deck. It's better than the Immortal Sun, that's for sure.
I think you could put Azor's Gateway in any deck, and the loot ability alone makes it fine.
Yeah, unless you're playing
Tiny Leaders.
And
if you happen to get there...
Don't do it if you're playing Tiny Leaders.
Yeah. And if you happen to get there...
Great.
With the thing, then it's insane. But if not, it's just a good value card that's good. It's kind of like top, or it's not quite as good as top, but something like that, except for if top had a thing that were like, the fifth time you do this, just win.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's true.
Okay. To the listeners.
To the listeners. That's you.
Which cards did we miss from the set that you wish we talked about? What cards are you most excited about from Rivals of Ixalan? And which of your decks do you want to put them in? Or which cool combos or synergies with a Rivals of Ixalan card have you come up with? I've said this many times on the show, but the comment section on YouTube is a place where the way we'd like it to function is that it's sort of an addendum to the show. So that after you watch the show, then you go into the comments and you get to see what I call, quote unquote, the brain trust giving all of its, you know, thought and all of its cool ideas out to the community as well. So if you want to go into the comment section and let us know cool combos and other cards you think are relevant, we think that really does help the community. So thank you.
And hey, if you want to build a deck with some of those cards, make sure you go and check out cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That is our sponsor for the show. That is the best place to get some singles. They'll get shipped to you so quickly. The set is out. You know you want to play it, or it's almost out. You know you want to play it. Pre-order your cards now or get them, and Card Kingdom will get them to you ASAP. And that's where it's at.
The set is almost out. It's almost pre-release time.
Yeah, next weekend. cardkingdom.com/commandzone.
And also, make sure to purchase Ultra Pro products. You can do it at Card Kingdom using the affiliate link or anywhere that will support Command Zone, support Game Nights. We really do appreciate it. And Ultra Pro stuff is awesome. These playmats we have in front of us right here. This Gashoth one, it looks sweet. We're going to be giving it away. Oh, sorry, Gashoth. This is a common one. Looks sweet.
Yeah.
We will be giving it away at the end of Game Nights. But if you want deck boxes, sleeves, also themed to Rivals of Ixalan.
Sweet dice. Ultra Pro has a little bit of everything, so you should check it out.
All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Have you finished the season?
I haven't, but I started watching it. You were tweeting about it. Mm-hmm. I think Prof, some other people. Black Mirror.
Black Mirror.
Season four. Just came out now.
6 episodes. Really solid season. I would say 3 of the episodes are in contention for being some of the best episodes they've ever made.
Well, we haven't talked about the show at all on our show, and I hadn't watched any of them, so I was starting at season 1. You guys, I had heard you talk about it, I think, and I was like, we need to watch this. So Ellen and I, my girlfriend and I, started watching it.
Did you skip the first episode of season 1, though? Because I tell everyone to skip that one.
No, actually, I thought it was fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think it's a bad way to introduce the show.
Yes, it is not. It's incongruous with what the show really is, but at the same time, I still thought it was good. It was thought provoking. I didn't.
Yeah, especially in today's day and age, specifically.
Yeah. But it's kind of like a Twilight Zone-esque. With a
modern horror twist.
Yeah, with a very sort of technical. Yeah. Or it's a little bit Dimension 404, right?
Yeah, Dimension 404, I'd say, is definitely the more PG and family friendly version of what Black Mirror is.
A little sillier, a little more funny.
Yeah, a lot sillier, a lot more campy. Black Mirror definitely does not pull any punches when it comes to some serious stuff. And
It takes itself very seriously.
Yeah, the entire history of You from the first season, that third episode, I think, has been optioned into a movie by Robert Downey Jr.'s companies. There are some very compelling stories in there. And the fourth season just came out on Netflix. If you haven't watched any Black Mirror at all, the first episode of the fourth season, you could send to anyone.
Yeah, that's the one we just got to.
Yeah,
so.
The USS McAllister. Yeah.
It's really good.
McAllister, I think. Yeah, it's great.
There's a bunch of episodes where Elle and I would sit there afterwards before we started the next episode and just talk about it for like a couple of minutes. Like, it was thought-provoking on that level. So Black Mirror on Netflix, highly recommend. Check it out.
Not for the faint of heart necessarily, but I would say this...
Not for kids, probably.
Not for kids, definitely not. And this season has, you know, usually the stories are pretty grim, but they've... Charlie Brooker, the guy that made the show, has been like, the season has more hope because the world needs it. So it's a little more wholesome than before. But the show is still great. I highly recommend you check it out if you have Netflix.
Something else that we always highly recommend you check out is the Masters of Modern podcast. It's our sister podcast. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. We got a lot of modern stuff coming up here soon in the Magic world.
Tons of GPs, too.
Yeah, also a Pro Tour. We didn't have one last year, but we do have one this year. So if you want to learn about modern, go to collected.company. You can find all of their episodes there right next to us, or you can follow them on Twitter at the MMcast.
And our editor for the show is Terry Robertson, doing the video and audio versions of these podcasts. Make sure you go to youtube.com/the Command Zone Podcast if you want to watch all of these cards pop up on the screen. Very useful for the set reviews specifically. And hey, you know, big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer as well for doing the living card animations that begin and end the show, and occasionally the screen is behind us as well.
Oh man, that screen didn't turn off.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, we did it. We've been having a little issues with one of those.
Lots of issues.
With my laptop. But it was fine. Nobody noticed. It's good.
Yeah, I didn't notice.
Okay.
All
right, everybody.
Set review.
We'll see you next week.
And hopefully at pre-release.
Oh, yeah, pre-release. My favorite events all year are always pre-releases.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so go to your local pre-release and let us know how you did. Thanks for listening.
I'll see you next time.
Peace.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Terry had a better song that we should have sung for Zakama. What? Ready for it? Chameleon.
Oh my gosh. That would have been way better.
We should have done that last episode.
Oh well. You win some, you lose some. We lost big this time around, but that's how it goes. Okay. All right. But Rivals.
I can't think of a song with the Rivals. Is there anything about exploring, discovering dinosaurs, pirates? I got one.
Yeah.
Did we do it already? Oh, wait. We did it already.
What was it?
We did it for a different reason, though.
What was it? SpongeBob?
The world is a vampire.
We did do it for a different reason. It was
we did
for
Maricel, because despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage.
Yep. Something about...
We have two misses so far. We've tried two songs.
Two songs. There's got to be one about... Something about Rivals. Are there any songs about Ixalan out there? Ha ha.
Rivals. No. All I can think of is that Karate Kid song. You're the best around.
I think we did that too at some point. We definitely have done that before.
We've done like every song because we've done like 120 songs. So we've done every song that's ever existed. Ever.